are so many fabulous faraway places to see, such as Mexico, Sweden, Hawaii, Japan, and Capri. There's so many exciting and wonderful places, mountains and jungles.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You're listening to Thought-Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark.
So why stay there when there are so many fabulous faraway places to see? Why should Spain and Tahiti and Rio just be only names?
Tom Pawkin with us, author of Bringing America Home, How America Lost Her Way, and How We Can Find Our Way Back. He's the chairman of the Texas Workforce Commission, is the former head of the Republican Party of Texas, a lawyer, a Vietnam vet. He served in the Nixon and Reagan administrations. And let's say, hey, Tom, welcome to the show.
Michael Ray, great to be with you.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here. Tom, we definitely lost our way. There's no question about it. And it didn't just start with this administration. I wish I could say it did, but it didn't. Where did it start? Where did we get off kilter?
Well, I think it really began to be evident in the post-Reagan period of American politics, both Republican and Democratic administrations nationally. I speak, of course, as one who started in the conservative movement and was part of the Reagan administration, and it's my view, and I articulated in the book, that the Bush administration, and I'm speaking more of the second Bush administration, George W. Bush, squandered the political capital that Goldwater Reagan conservatives took more than three decades to build up.
Tom, let me hold you there.
Right.
Let's go back over that. What did that mean, just so we don't gloss over it and the audience doesn't catch what you're talking about? What did that mean?
Well, it essentially meant that this administration hijacked the conservative movement. Traditionally, conservatism stood for small government, returning power as much as possible from the federal government to the states and local communities. And a lot of Republicans began to develop the idea big government was fine as long as we were in control. Secondly, if you look at both the Goldwater and Reagan phenomenon, it really was sort of a Main Street versus Wall Street crowd. It was Main Street producers, small business men and women, middle-class entrepreneurs that were the backbone of the conservative movement. And again, in the post-Reagan period of Republican politics, I think we allowed too much the influence of the Wall Street financiers over our party, and I think both parties did it. You saw it in the Clinton administration, and you saw it in the George W. Bush administration with the bailouts of the too-big-to-fail financial institutions, and with the American taxpayers paying 100 cents on the dollar when the Wall Street traders got on the wrong side of a risky credit derivative trade. So one of my arguments is that America's gone from having the strongest economy in the world to being in the most serious economic crisis since the Great Depression, and we have to act boldly in order to get ourselves back on the right track, rebuild our manufacturing base, bring good jobs home to America, and avoid what's happening, which is we've lost one-third of our manufacturing base. That's 5.5 million American jobs that have gone away in the last decade. We've had zero growth in private sector jobs over the last decade. And the only real way we're going to get out of this serious national recession is with capital investment and savings, encouraging those in order to create private sector jobs here in the U.S. And I don't see any evidence that either the Bush or the Obama administrations are moving in that or have moved in that direction.
And we're moving in the total opposite direction, obviously. We have oil-rich lands right here in the United States that we can be developing right now. Texas has got refineries that could even expand on itself. We've got the capability ourselves to be able to stand on our own 2 feet financially. My concern, more than financial, and obviously that was the trigger, the direction that caused everybody to move the way they moved. My real concern is what's going on with the culture in this country. We are a Judeo-Christian ethic. The everything that we did, every basis of who we are, was founded on that, and we find that eroded today. I happen not to be Christian. I happen to be Jewish. But I was brought up with the Christmas carols. I was brought up with celebrating Christmas. I was brought up with all of the American cultural traditions that we all held dear. I was brought up with saying the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I was always proud of my country. I am a former Marine. and I'm an American from the word go, I see this eroding, and I see this becoming a country that doesn't look anything like what you and I were brought up with.
Michael Ray, you raise a great point, and really, where do you get your ethical compass unless the underpinning of the Judeo-Christian ethic? And that is what was a strength of this nation. I mean, the first words of the Declaration of Independence, we hold these truths. I have a chapter in the book called The Coarsening of the Culture, and it takes two quotes at the beginning. When the pilgrims came over here, the first words of the Mayflower Compact were, "In the name of God, amen." And then I have a quote from Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the great Russian novelist, who is quoted as saying, "Men have forgotten God," and he talks about how that impacted what happened in Russia when the communists took over, and the Russians had forgotten God and ignored him, and I think that's a very dangerous process. And after he went into exile in the West, he warned us, Americans and Europeans, we're falling into the same trap. And I think you're right. And in fact, people of all faiths and people of no faith understand you've got to have an ethical compass in order to make this free society work, in order to preserve the values. And there's a fine line, but we cannot simply abolish, if you will, God from the public square, and that seems to be what's happening. And when I go overseas, you know, where it's not like American manufactured products you see overseas, you see the Hollywood culture, and you see these kids imitating, in a way, what they think it is Americans are all about, and it's not a pretty picture what we're exporting abroad.
See, I was brought up as a teenager. I went to junior high school and high school in the 50s. I graduated in 1960. And in those years, it was completely different than it is today. And I'm not saying one's good, better, or whatever the case may be. But in the schools, we were taught to read and write and how to do math and so on and so forth. That's not what's going on in the schools today. In the schools today, there's no auto shop. There's no wood shop. There's none of the things that taught kids how to practically go out and get a job after they get out of high school.
And be self-sufficient.
Absolutely.
In fact, I've got a chapter called Reforming Our Educational System, and I tell you, listening to what you just said, you and I are on the same page, and we're about the same age, and we went through the same phenomenon. And I remember coming back from Vietnam, and I was on the National Advisory Council on Vocational Education. And at that time, even in the early 70s, we emphasized vocational and technical education in our high schools and post-secondary institutions. Somehow we got away from that later on, and the idea developed everybody had to go to a four-year institution. We were going to become the knowledge industry somehow, and people didn't have to worry about learning a skill. And we're finally waking up and realize we went in the wrong direction. I chair the Texas Workforce Commission, and we're really emphasizing again community colleges, using our God-given talents, whichever direction they take us, but not assuming that just because someone goes to a four-year institution, he or she's better than someone who is a skilled craftsman and may have gone to work after high school or after community college. We've got to get away from that kind of elitism that develops somewhere along the line.
There's another area of concern. You know, I saw your picture on the back of the book. We're probably very close in the same age. And let me ask you this. Could you imagine, as a 14-year-old, the way you were brought up with your parents using a four-letter expletive to your mother?
No,
the back of your hair stands up, doesn't it?
But you know, in our movies, you see kids do that.
Yes,
Michael, right?
That's the problem. That is exactly what the problem is. We've got a world today, and I don't know quite what's going on in this country yet. I'm starting to get a better picture, but we have a world today that our police officers, they're hamstrung, their hands are tied behind them. If they say the wrong word, they go to jail. We have parents that try to discipline kids. If they do it the wrong way, they go to jail. You hear what I'm saying?
Right.
Where do we go to be able to grasp back the control and the independence that we once had? It's all of a sudden Big Brother is there, and Big Brother is there in the auto industry, the finance industry, and Tom, I can go on for an hour.
Well, that's
this.
What happens, though, when your value structure breaks down. Everything becomes legalistic. and by the government or being politically correct. And that's an indication. See, this is what worries me, Michael Ray. If this economic situation were to get worse, and it can, because I don't think they're doing what's necessary in Washington to fix it. If it gets worse, where are the roots that our parents or grandparents had when they went through the Great Depression and they had a sense of family, neighborhood, community, belief in God, a strong sense of patriotism? If you don't have the roots of community, there's a great book by Simone Weil called The Need for Roots. When you become a rootless people, it's very easy for this thing to get very chaotic in a short period of time if all falls apart economically, and it worries me. And I think at the end of the day, you've got to fix the culture if you're going to fix everything else.
No, absolutely. There's no question about it. And I think the biggest problem that we have is when we have a political figure stand up and say something to the effect of almost the same words, I'll paraphrase it a bit, to stand up and say, pass the thing, and then you'll find out what's in it afterwards.
Oh, well.
What do you do with something like that? And this bill in and of itself, and I'm not going to get too far off in this, I want to stay focused here, but this bill effectively, you're looking at private armies, you're looking at all kinds of things that nobody had any kind of an idea that would come to pass and come together, the erosion of the Second Amendment, everything that we stand for. My problem with it is basically this. The president today is not a dumb man. He's a very sophisticated individual. He's very smart.
And he's got some smart people around him.
Absolutely. And my concern with it being so smart is that everything that's going on right now is intentional. You're looking at the economy being eroded, you're looking at the culture being eroded, and you look at total confusion. And I'm looking at I'm looking at Germany prior to the Second World War, not the leaders, but the way that
the Weimar Republic.
Yes. And the same confusion and economic problems. And then you get
radical elements bubbling up.
Yep, that's exactly what we're looking at.
I think your point's very well taken, and that's the danger. Our founding fathers warned at the beginning of the dangers of concentration of power and too much power in the hands of the executive branch. And if you read the Federalist Papers, they were very clear on the importance of checks and balances, separation of powers, and the principle of federalism, which is returning power to the states, local communities, and the people themselves wherever possible. We've been going in the wrong direction for a number of decades now, and we could pay a very serious price for that.
No, absolutely. I just reached behind me. I have a book, and that book is Rules for Radicals, and it was by Saul Alinsky. You know the name. Okay.
I'm very familiar with it. When I was director of action in the Reagan administration, my predecessor, Sam Brown, I served in Vietnam. Sam supported the other side in the war, but he had every New Vista volunteer get a copy of Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. As they went out organizing people around the country at taxpayers' expense. Needless to say, I eliminated that 100%. But Rules for Radicals, there was a whole warehouse full of Saul Alinsky's book.
Oh, absolutely. And just, page 61, and I've had this, and it has to do with ego, and I won't belabor it, but the ego of the organizer is stronger and more monumental than the ego of the leader. The leader is driven by the desire for power, while the organizer is driven by the desire to create. The organizer, in a true sense, reaching for the highest level for which man can reach, to create, to be a great creator, to play God. And that's about what we're looking at.
Well, it's the utopianism, and there have been so many failed utopian expressions, and what have they often led to in the 20th century? Fascism, Nazism, communism.
Sure.
And Alinsky was all about power and do whatever it takes. I mean, there's no such thing as an ethical compass. It's a will to power, and if a moral constraint's getting your way, don't worry about them. Just do whatever is necessary, whatever works, is an expression I've used in terms of that mindset.
Sure, and by the way, if you look at the current administration and those that surround that administration, you've got people that are demonstrating Alinsky's philosophies and everything that the man was about. Okay, all of that said, how do we do this? And when I say how do we do this, the big concern is we can say, go to our legislators. It's who you're going to vote for. Who knows who to vote for anymore? And what we've seen in legislators now, not necessarily the Republican side, but what we've watched in the Democratic side with the townhouses and the the town hall meetings, is we watch somebody forgot who was working for who, and we've seen condescension. So we're in a position right now that it is very confusing, and thank goodness for the tea parties. Otherwise, we would be buried right now.
Well, I agree. I mean, there's a conservative populist wave that's stronger than anything I've seen in my lifetime. It was stronger than the pre-Reagan period, stronger than 1994 when I was elected state chairman of the Republican Party in Texas, and we began our move towards majority status in that state, and we took Congress back. The difference of the previous two is we had Ronald Reagan as the sort of leader of the forces concerned about what was going on in Washington. In 1994, the Republicans offered a contract for America, contract with America. And who's the leader now? Where is this movement heading? And there is a little bit of pox on both your houses because, quite frankly, the Republicans let people down in that post-Reagan period. And so there's a lot of anger out there. Now, how do you focus in a constructive fashion to really throw the rascals out and get things back on the right track? I'm a big believer in term limits. I don't think anybody's indispensable. I talk about it in the book. But you really need a team of people working together. It can't be just different groups totally separated, because that was the strength of the Reagan movement. It was a team of people guided by ideas. We weren't right. The president wasn't right all the time. But nonetheless, there was a philosophical underpinning and a group of people who worked together who disagreed between and among themselves. There were some libertarians and traditionalists, but they worked for the good of the country. And that's what we got to get back to, rather than the short-term political gain. Or who do we have to appease in order to get the money for our campaigns? It's too driven by personal motivation and not driven by people who recognize that we've got 5 to 10 years to get this ship turned around in the right direction. And if we don't turn it around in the right direction, at some point it gets to be too late.
Let me give you a hypothetical. And if I wanted to run for the presidency in 2012, I'm going to give you the formula that could get me in, hands down, no question about it, and it's a shame to say what I'm going to say next. Let's say, hypothetically, this is not true about me, but let's say that I was a suspected pedophile. Let's say that I was a suspected felon, and I had a list of things behind me that you wouldn't want representing you. Okay, all of that said, a run for office. Everybody who votes for me gets $10,000. How fast do you think I'd get in?
No, you wouldn't get in.
Oh, I bet I would. I bet I would get in.
You're more pessimistic than I am about the state of the American people. In fact, I've got a quote in my book. There's a Gallup poll that was taken. There were two Gallup polls, 2007 and 2008, in which the American people, I think it was 79% in one and over 80%, they're worried about the culture, Michael.
That's the problem, Tom. This is what I'm saying. By the way, I would never want to see that happen, but at the same time, that's what got us into this mess. Promise me something. Tell me what I'm going to get, and I'll vote for you. That's what happened.
I think the Tea Party people, or I think a lot of the people that are upset and trying to do something, are ahead of our leaders in Washington. They're worried about their kids and grandkids. That's why I got back into this. That's why when Governor Perry asked me to chair the Texas Workforce Commission, I've been out of government since the Reagan administration. That's why I wrote this book, Bringing America Home. But let me just read one paragraph. The American people are well ahead of their political leaders in sensing that our moral compass has gone dreadfully wrong. A May 2007 Gallup poll reports that 82% of Americans believe that the state of moral values in the country as a whole is growing worse. 74% said that their overall perception of our moral values is negative. So I know that's negative information in a way, but it does say the people sense that something is coming unraveled in this culture, and we've got to figure out how to put it back together. And it really is by going back to the tenets of the Judeo-Christian ethic.
By the way, Tom, based on what I just said prior to, I believe what you believe in my heart of hearts, and if there's any way, shape, or form that we can help over on this side, I'm on your team.
Well,
do you hear it?
We've got to be part of a team, Michael.
Yeah. No, I got it. I absolutely have it. I just think it's a shame that we have to even be having this conversation.
Well, you're absolutely right. I had a young man coming in my office today in Austin, Texas, 25 years old, fine young man, and he's concerned about some of the same issues that you and I are talking about tonight. And he was asking me for some advice, and I said, whatever you do in the future in politics, and he's a very bright guy, could be very successful, don't cross the line. Don't abandon your principles just for the sake of money or a particular race or a situation. Once you cross the line, it's hard to come back. And if you can get a group of principled people, and we're all flawed, but working together for the good of the country, and then bring some of these young people along who are worried, and it's their future more than ours. I'm sure you and we've had a good run, Michael.
You bet.
And people ahead of us did good for us. And the years I've got left, I want to help turn the ship around in the right direction and turn it over to a younger generation who've got their heads screwed on the right way and get them to fix America. And, you know, Ronald Reagan had a great expression, it's not about right or left, it's about up or down.
Yeah.
And how do we turn this country around, get it back on the track so the best years are not behind us? As too many people believe they are behind us, but they don't have to be if we make the right decision and we put the right leaders in place and work together for the good of the country.
Okay, we're just about out of time, Tom, but one of the things I want to say prior to us leaving for this segment is that we're okay as long as we're not watching the high school football team, everybody running the same way. And with that, Tom Paulkin, do you have a website we can find you at?
All right, tompaulkin.com. It's PAUKEN.com. And the book, Bringing America Home, is for sale at Amazon.com.
Hey, Tom, hey, good meeting you, and thank you so much for being here.
Hey, great discussion. Great comments, Michael Ray. Thanks for
having
me.
Take care. Good night.
I can only give you love that lasts forever, and the promise to be near each time you call. And the only heart I own for you and you alone, that's all, that's all. I can only give you country walks in springtime. And a hand-